Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
According to a new study, watching television for more than 3.5 hours a day can lead to a decline in memory. Said Trump, "Oh my God, Melinda, did you see this?"
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to Senator Bernie Sanders, who is currently seeking the Democratic nomination for president. But first, a closer look.
President Trump returned from his summit with Kim Jong-un. He was facing more fallout from Michael Cohen's congressional testimony. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. This has truly been one of the most eventful weeks of the Trump presidency, and every week of the Trump presidency is eventful. Just once, I'd like the CNN chyron to say, breaking, nothing happened, now get a good night's sleep. For example, today, Trump wrapped up his summit in Vietnam with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and it wouldn't be a Trump summit with a world leader without a super weird handshake. Check out this moment between Trump and Kim and watch specifically for how Trump goes in for the handshake. It's like he was going in for a karate chop and then remembered it was supposed to be a handshake. Trump always shakes hands the way a 7-year-old boy would think a big, important businessman shakes hands. I'm gonna go in for the chop, then up and down real hard, and then I say, good job with the files. We should do golfing sometime. Now, you might think the tyrannical dictator of an oppressive regime would never get stressed out, but on his way to the summit, cameras apparently caught Kim lighting up a cigarette.
Along the way, the North Korean dictator was caught giving in to one of his vices, taking a smoke break and using what appeared to be a crystal ashtray.
He's one of the most brutal dictators in the world, and he looks like a Kmart employee on Black Friday pacing around the parking lot trying to build up the nerve to quit. All right, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to say, Donald, it's over. Don't try to chop my hand. Everything about this summit was weird. For example, the White House press pool, which consists of a group of rotating reporters whose job it is to track the president's movements, was apparently transported to Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un in a broken bus. According to the report, the pool was transported to the palace in a bus with a broken horn that consistently honked on its own at nothing. I will say, a horn that honked at nothing sounds like the title of a children's book about Donald Trump. Now, everyone, let's be clear. Everyone should want a peaceful diplomatic solution. And after a summit like this, you'd at least want a coherent explanation of where things stand given the stakes of the situation. And yet, here is Trump describing the summit with Kim after it was over.
We just left Chairman Kim. We had a really, I think, a very productive time. We spent pretty much all day with Kim Jong-un, who is... He's quite a guy and quite a character.
Quite a character? He's one of the most brutal dictators in the world, and you're talking about him like he's Dwight from The Office.
This guy, let me tell you, loves his beats. Loves him. Also killed thousands.
Of course, it's very possible Trump was distracted by the big story looming over the summit, the explosive congressional testimony of his former personal fixer, Michael Cohen. In fact, there's already fallout from the Cohen hearing. This morning, the Democratic chairman of the committee, Elijah Cummings, said the committee would probably call more witnesses. Cummings said if Michael Cohen mentioned their names in the hearing yesterday, chances are they will be called in to testify, too. Now, that's huge. It means everyone from Jared Kushner to Ivanka Trump to Don Jr. could be called in to testify. But personally, I'm most excited about one person in particular, and it comes from this exchange yesterday.
To your knowledge, did the president ever provide inflated assets to an insurance company?
Yes.
Who else knows that the president did this?
Alan Weisselberg, Ron Lieberman, and Matthew Calamari.
That's right. There's an actual human person named Matthew Calamari. Or at least I think he is. A person and not Squidward's deadbeat uncle on SpongeBob. If there's any upside to electing a New Yorker as president, it's that we will at least get to hear a member of Congress say the words, "Thank you for being here, Mr. Calamari." We would urge you to remember you're under oath and for you not to forget about it. And you can tell Trump and Republicans are worried about Cohen's testimony because leading up to it, they've been publicly threatening him. On Tuesday, Congressman Matt Gaetz threatened to reveal information about Cohen's personal life. And last month, Trump went on Fox News and said investigators should look into Cohen's father-in-law for committing some sort of crime, although he wasn't very clear on the specifics.
In order to get a sentence reduced, he says, I have an idea. I'll give you some information on the president. Well, there is no information, but he should give information maybe on his father-in-law because that's the one that people want to look at because where does that money? That's the money in the family. And I guess he didn't want to talk about his father-in-law. He's trying to get his sentence reduced.
What is his father-in-law's name?
I don't know, but you'll find out and you'll look into it.
Man, he just loves to talk in that details-free mafia dialect. I'd hate to get driving directions from a Trump voice GPS.
Maybe you'll go this way for a little bit, and then you'll turn one way or the other, and you'll get somewhere, or you won't, capiche?
In case you're wondering how much dirt Cohen really has on Trump, just remember, Cohen has known Trump for years. He was his personal fixer, his lawyer, his enforcer. He routinely threatened people on Trump's behalf, as he explained to the committee yesterday.
How many times did Mr. Trump asked you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Quite a few times.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably.
Dear God. At this rate, Congress is going to have to start using Price is Right rules. And even as late as September 2017, Cohen said he would remain loyal to Trump. He told Vanity Fair, I'm the guy who stops the leaks. I'm the guy who protects the president and the family. I'm the guy who would take a bullet for the president. Okay, but no, Trump definitely would not take a bullet for you. If you were with Trump and he sensed danger, he would knock you over and run out of the room like George Costanza. And there's still so much the public does not know about Trump's relationship with Cohen. For example, last year, the Washington Post reported that the government has seized more than 100 recordings that Cohen made of his conversations with people discussing matters that could relate to Trump and his businesses and with Trump himself talking. Cohen appeared to make some recordings with an iPhone. Wow, an iPhone. So not only did Cohen flip on Trump, so did Siri. Siri knew so much, she had to go into the witness protection program.
My name isn't Siri. My name is Matthew Calamari.
This is why we need yesterday's hearings, because we still don't know what's in those recordings. One of the few people who does, Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani, even accidentally admitted that those tapes might have damning information in them in an interview with The New Yorker. Responding to a story about Trump's plan to build a Trump Tower in Moscow during the campaign, Rudy said, I can tell you from the moment I read the story, I knew the story was false. Because I have been through all the tapes. Wait, what tapes have you gone through? I shouldn't have said tapes. So there were no tapes you listened to, though? No tapes. Well, I have listened to tapes, but none of them concern this. I remember what it is now. I was thinking about a mixtape that Mr. Trump made for me. You know who I'd love to see testify in front of Congress? Rudy. He crumbles under no pressure. I mean, look at him. He always looks like he just sat on a park bench and it turned out to be a ski lift. Oh, what's the big idea, bench? Not only did Trump fail to get a deal in Vietnam, but as he returns home, he's facing the fallout from Cohen's explosive testimony. We know so much today that we didn't know yesterday. In fact, at this point, someone should just ask Cohen point blank how many times Trump broke the law.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is a United States senator from Vermont. He recently announced his candidacy for president of the United States. Please welcome back to the show, Senator Bernie Sanders, everyone. Welcome back, Senator.
Great to be with you.
You know, you were here in 2015, right after you announced, and when you announced that time, it was not as big of a deal as it was this time. You were, New York Times put it on A21.
A19.
A19,
oh,
yeah.
Who's counting?
A lot has changed. One thing that's changed is the party has moved more to the left, and also, it is a more crowded field. It seems like a lot of people are jumping into it. Do you, having gone through what you went through 4 years ago, feel more prepared?
I do, and I think what I'm excited about is that many of the ideas that we talked about 3 or 4 years ago, which at that time were thought to be crazy and extreme and radical, are now supported by a considerable majority of the American people. So 4 years ago when we talked about raising the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour, oh, my God, you can't do that. 5 states have already done it in the last year. That's progress. You know, we talked about ending the disgrace of the United States being the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people through a Medicare for All single-payer program. Crazy idea 4 years ago. Majority of the American people support it today. And that's important because health care, Seth, to my mind, health care is a human right. And it should not matter whether you're rich, whether you're poor, to make certain that your kid gets the best possible health care available. That's what we got to do. Public colleges and universities, tuition-free. It's now an idea that is spreading all over this country. And importantly, 4 years ago, I said, we have got to stand up to the fossil fuel industry. We have got to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. And I think more and more people understand that climate change is an existential threat to this planet, and we have got to be aggressive in transforming our energy system.
I want to ask this. A lot of those issues obviously distinguish you from the competition last time. One of the successes is you now have convinced a lot of the people that are running against you.
Yeah.
Do you ever want to say, because a lot of them obviously are friends or colleagues, do you ever want to say, hey, this is kind of my Medicare for All, this kind of my or are you happy that it is now a consensus?
Look, nobody, you know, nobody, no one person can do it alone. So we need a lot of voices out there. And one of the things also, you asked me the difference between now and then. In the first week of our campaign, Seth, we have signed up 1 million volunteers who are prepared to roll up their sleeves and get to work, not only to help me win the nomination and to defeat the most dangerous president in modern history, Mr. Trump, but also to help us take on the very powerful special interests, Wall Street, the fossil fuel industry, and the military industrial complex that have just so much power over the economic and political life of this country.
So many senators running. Obviously, you see them. They are your colleagues. Is it awkward that you all know that you're all trying to be president?
You know, look.
I'll take that as a yes.
The short answer is yes.
Yeah, okay, great. That's human. You know, I would say that's a human reaction.
We all have lunch together every Tuesday, and you got half the caucus running for the United for president. You know, so it is kind of strange. But on the other hand, you know, we have known each other. I've known Elizabeth Warren for like 20 years. I've known many of the other senators for a long time, and we're friends. And I think what all of us understand, obviously each and every one of us wants to win the nomination. I certainly do. But I think we all understand that no matter who wins, everybody is going to rally around that candidate and defeat Donald Trump. That is most important.
That's nice to hear. Speaking of our president, obviously, he was over in Vietnam. He was talking with Kim Jong-un. Do you think, ultimately, it is good to talk to other world leaders, even those you disagree with? And how would you approach a meeting with a dictator like that?
Look, you know, I think Trump is you know, a pathological liar and a racist and a sexist. You know, we go on and on and on, describe you, authoritarian personality. But on the other hand, I don't think anybody in this country or in this world wants to see Kim Jong-un, who is a dangerous dictator, have nuclear weapons. So the fact that Trump is attempting to rid that country of nuclear weapons, I think it's the right thing to do. And I think that it is a positive thing. Go and sit down with people who you have strong disagreements with and do your best to try to work it out. We are spending right now on this planet, you know, well over $1 trillion every year on weapons of destruction. And you got children in America, children all over the world who are hungry, kids who are dying from preventable diseases. So what we have got to try to do is bring this world together to fight climate change, to see if we can work out differences of opinion in a peaceful way, start cutting military spending, use that money for healthcare, for education, to uplift the poorest people in the world.
I certainly agree with that. You're obviously very busy. You are a senator. You're running for president. Did you have time to watch the Michael Cohen hearing yesterday? And what was your takeaway?
I watched it a bit. And my takeaway is that Cohen kind of confirmed what many of us had known. And by the way, it really does not give me pleasure to say that what we have always known is that we have a president who is a pathological liar. We have a president who, as Cohen indicated, is a racist. And we have a president who is a fraud. He is a fraud. When he ran for office, he told working people all over this country that he was going to represent their interests. And yet, in his first year in office, he tried to throw 32 million Americans off of the health care that they have. That's not helping working families in this country. He said that he would have a tax plan that benefited everybody. Well, over a 10-year period, 83% of those benefits go to the top 1%. He said he wouldn't cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, yet he brought forth a budget that did exactly that. So I think he lied to the working families of this country, and I think many of them understand. They understand that, and they understand that finally we need a government where you have a president not surrounded by billionaires, but a president who is working for working families and trying to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%.
A lot of pundits, some people who are already running, are warning about this idea that if the Democratic Party goes too far left, that will enable a Trump victory because people in the center will flee to him out of fear of the left.
No, I strongly disagree with that. I think one of the reasons that people like Trump get elected is so many working people, lower-income people, have given up on the political process and they don't vote. And compared to other countries around the world, our voter turnout is not particularly high. And I think what we need are candidates who speak to ordinary people who today are in a lot of pain, right? We don't talk about it enough. You got mothers all over this country who cannot find quality childcare for their little ones. We have kids who are graduating college, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. Others can't even afford to go to college. We got people who are working two or three jobs while we have the three wealthiest people in this country owning more wealth than the bottom half of the American people. We have to raise that as a moral issue. When we have so many people in poverty, so many people uninsured, is it acceptable that so few have so much money and so much power? And I think when you start talking about those issues and you say, yeah, I understand you can't make it on $10 an hour. I understand that you're worried about the future generation. You're worried about whether your kids are going to have a lower standard of living than you have. You're worried about climate change. When we speak to the needs of working people and we say, yes, we are prepared to take on Wall Street and the fossil fuel industry and all of the big money interest to create an economy that works for all of us, I think people say, you know what, it's about time. And I'm going to go out and vote, and I'm going to support those candidates. That's my view.
You had a... Obviously, there were so many things about your last campaign that were successful, but ultimately you didn't win the nomination. One thing that people reflecting back would say is that you did not have a diverse enough coalition of people behind you. How have you addressed that moving into this?
That's a very fair question. We ended up, you know, one of the problems of the last campaign is when we began, you know, I come from a very small state. I was not known by a whole lot of people. But as the campaign progressed, we did much better with the African-American community, with the Latino community, and we did better in general. And by the time the campaign ended, what I'm really excited about, we want to build on, is that we ended up getting more votes from young people, black and white and Latino, Asian-American, Native American, than Clinton or Trump combined. That's pretty good. Okay, so what we... But your point is right. You know, we started off with a few people from Vermont, and the campaign moved so quickly, we did not put together the kind of diverse campaign that we should have. And this time, we will, in fact, do just that.
I'm glad to hear that. I heard you say, you know, one thing you might do is obviously you're running, as you've established, a pathological liar, as we try to establish every night. I've heard you joke you're going to bring a lie detector on stage, but at a debate. But in reality, how do you run against someone who, obviously, you're very left. You must be aware that Donald Trump would paint you as even farther left than
you know,
that.
Seth, here's the, I never use the word left. Yeah. I don't, I am. I'm a democratic socialist, so that's the way it is. But the issues that we talk about, is it left to say that in this country we should have a minimum wage that is a living wage? Is it left to say that everybody should have health care as a right, that we should expand Social Security because so many of our people can't make it, elderly people can't make it on $12,000, $13,000 a year? Is it left to say that we have to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and create millions and millions of jobs? Is it left to say that we have to address the crisis of climate change, or that we have to deal with criminal justice reform or immigration reform? We have to deal with sexism, racism, and homophobia. I don't think those are left issues. You know, I think sometimes the media makes a big deal about it. I think, in fact, on all of those issues and more, sensible gun safety legislation, I think you have the strong majority of the American people saying, yeah, I agree with that. And let's have people in Washington who stand with me rather than just wealthy campaign contributors. That's kind of what this campaign is about.
Give it up for Senator Bernie Sanders, everyone.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.